from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It is a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brendan behind the glass as well. No, not really.
I'm not either. The whole day off on Monday screws everything up.
I forgot today was Wednesday. I really did. And I've had a lot going on this morning. I can't talk about an ongoing investigation, though, so
yeah,
I've got to leave it at that.
I didn't know how much you were going to be willing to share, but just because we're here for you and trying to deal with it with you.
Yeah.
I have a ton of sympathy for you, my friend. You've gone through hell here.
It's been an eventful morning, and I appreciate you, too, both having my back, as always. So I do appreciate that. But I am not in the studio today. But I can't talk about it in an ongoing investigation. The health and the safety are all fine. Everything's okay.
Yes.
Just an eventful morning, to say the least. It was also an eventful evening for the Houston Astros yesterday as they continue their winning streak, just finding ways to win. Doesn't matter if they get down early. Doesn't matter if the pitcher doesn't have a great start. It doesn't seem to matter. The only consistent is that the Astros continue to win, which is awesome. Great to see in the city of Houston, 8 in a row. And also that Yordan Alvarez continues to show that the dude's an MVP candidate. Home run number 25 on the year yesterday came after he hosed a dude at the plate, which was amazing to see. I actually thought he overthrew his cutoff man. I yelled at the TV, "What are you doing, Yordan? Overshooting the cutoff man." Oh, wait a second. He got him out at the plate. Yordan proving that he might not only be, like we keep saying, he's one of the best hitters in baseball, mm-hmm. which is accurate. He might be one of the best players in baseball and like a legitimate, serious MVP candidate.
He definitely is. Because if you look at the numbers, Jeremy, and I'm sorry because I'm overstepping my bounds. That's normally your area of expertise.
Lane,
but when I was looking at the numbers, as much as Aaron Judge had a head start on everybody for a majority of the first half of the baseball season, and also being in the media capital of the world in New York, everybody was talking that he was running away with MVP. If you look at it now and put them side by side, about the only thing Aaron Judge has over Yordan Alvarez is home runs, and it's not that far of a gap anymore because he hit another one last night. But other than that, Yordan has not only closed the gap, he's taken the lead in several key statistical categories. And when you focus on that and you look at what he's meant to this team, because the Yankees have, what, three guys with 20-plus home runs already with Rizzo and Stanton they've been off this crazy start where the Astros started slow. You look at what Yordan has meant with all the injuries the Astros have had to get through, and he has carried this team in so many ways that's what an MVP is supposed to be. And I think that aside from being in New York with all the hype, Yordan – at a certain point has got to start registering with everyone across the country is legitimately the best player in the American League this season.
Yeah, it's been quite the ride for Yordan this season. It as far as like him as a legitimate MVP, it's something that was within the realm of possibility. I think, you know, Cody mentioned it at the beginning of the season.
He did. He picked him. Yeah,
which was a great call by Cody. And I think one of the things that, like, I think held us back from saying that he's going to be an MVP is the fact that he didn't play a whole lot of defense. And when he does, he's average at it. Like, if you look at his WAR, he has a 3.9 WAR. For the sake of boring you for a second, his offensive WAR is 3.9. So that means he's a net zero defensively, which is actually, I think, a good thing. If Yordan Alvarez is giving you, you know, average left field, that's actually a benefit. We all know that I would love him from just to sit him on the bench the entire time. But he is leading the league, the American League, in WAR for position players, despite giving you nothing on defense on the defensive WAR. So it shows you how good he's been with the bat. But his bat has outplayed everybody else overall. Like, he's ahead of Mike Trout, who does it on both ends. He's ahead of Kyle Tucker, who does it on both ends. Rafael Devers as well, who, you know, good offensive player, pretty good defensive player as well. The offensive numbers I like to look at are OPS, which he leads the league in. But if you throw in the WAR thing for position players, too, he's at the very top. And I have a confession to make. I think it was last week, 2 weeks ago, Brendan is my witness. I think we were watching ESPN in the bullpen, Blankers. I think it was a couple minutes before you got there. Mm-hmm. And they listed the odds, the MVP odds to, you know, in the American League. And I saw Yordan Alvarez's odds at, like, plus 1,500. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, plus 1,500 for Yordan Alvarez? That's terrific odds. I laid it. I played the bet. I have Yordan
good for
Alvarez
you.
With a futures MVP. So, of course, I'm already rooting for the guy because he's an Astro, but especially rooting for him because I got a little bit of skin in the game here.
Well, and you look at it too, Jeremy, and you think about this from an Aaron Judge perspective. You got bumped by Altuve the last time you were in the MVP running. Oh. Now he's going to have more of the red ass for the redhead because of the fact that Yordan could very – it's conceivable he could bump him. And then when he – like you said, when he made a play – because I'm like you. I'm yelling last night – when he caught that ball in left field going, okay, look, you still have to protect the fact that you need to, you have a one-run lead. So you don't need to be going for the guy at the plate. And then he pulls a Bo Jackson out of his back pocket, and he's not quite to the warning track. And I tweeted it last night. I think they clocked it at 92.5 miles an hour at over 250 feet. And the other part of it that you have to give credit to is Maldonado, because the throw was offline, and the fact that he could contorted his body to be able to get back near the plate and put the tag on him was just incredible. And it was one of those games where you felt like you didn't have enough runs no matter how many runs you scored. But then he bounces right back after that play and goes deep, and you're like, oh, my God, this guy is having one of those, you know, movie-type, the natural-type seasons where he's just doing it all, and that was just the last thing we hadn't seen yet.
You know what was crazy about that home run, too? Because, like, we notice what pitchers are doing against Yordan. You know, they throw the whole kitchen sink at him. You know, they'll try to bust him up and in with fastballs. He can homer with that. They try to get him the breaking stuff on the outside corner at the knees. He homers with that. That one yesterday was a backdoor breaking ball that was off the plate. It was out of the zone. Like, what is a pitcher to do if Yordan Alvarez is hitting home runs on breaking balls that are 6 inches off the outside corner? Pitchers do not stand a chance.
No, and you look at it. The last guy that he did it against with the walk-off, we were talking about, was a backdoor slider that had been effective, but that they had enough tape on it to know that he's been throwing it a lot. And Yordan, obviously doing his homework, knew and had seen that pitch and was expecting it, but did the same thing. That's an outside pitch for a left-handed hitter that's so hard to, like, barrel up, and if you're going to barrel it up, to get it in the right trajectory on the right angle and put some bat speed behind it. The fact that he's done it twice in this series against the Royals and just stung it, you're like, I mean, you talk about coverage area across every aspect of the plate. This guy's got it, man.
Yeah, and he's covering it outside of the zone too, which is unbelievable. And one of the things that I'm really bullish about, and we know Yordan Alvarez has power, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we knew that Yordan had power as soon as he came up and he homered in his very first game, which kind of began the legend of Yordan Alvarez. One of the elements that I, like, he's on pace to hit 50 home runs this year, break Bagwell's record. One of the areas that I think would make him a 50 home run hitter, one of the areas that I think would make him contending for the home run lead in the American League, which he's firmly in those conversations right now, is that opposite field approach. Because he played, let's face it, the Crawford boxes is a short porch in left field. He's a lefty that has the strength to hit it into the Crawford boxes. Lance Berkman was a master at that. And if Yordan Alvarez adds that element to his game, which I think he has been, we've seen some of it, we saw it yesterday, if he can get those cheapies to the Crawford boxes on backdoor breaking balls on the outside corner, the dude's going to hit 50, maybe even flirt with 60 at some point in his career.
Let me tell you who he needs to have a conversation with. And he's probably, obviously he's headed to the All-Star game. Whether he does the home run derby or not, David Ortiz should be at the All-Star game.
Yeah.
He needs to have a conversation with Big Poppy, and Big Poppy should explain to him how to play. He played the Green Monster for years.
That's a great call.
Because if he learns how to play the opposite field, Crawford boxes the way Poppy played the Monster, look the hell out for anybody coming to Minute Maid Park or playing against the Astros. Because if this guy finds a way to just be able to flick it and do what he did last night and take it down the line a little bit more, too, on outside pitches – pitchers, like you said, don't stand a chance because he already has a really keen eye at the plate. He hits for average. He hits for power. But if he starts hitting oppo tacos and he starts hitting, you know, things on just like you said, even off 3-4 inches off the plate, but he learns how to take it, step that way and take it the other way and kind of wait that half second. My goodness, he could actually get better, and that's even scarier for anybody else in baseball.
Amazing play coverage, you called it. I think David Ortiz is a great call. I mean, he abused the Monster in left field to go with his, you know, pull power, too. Yordan, to me, he is firmly in the mix of MVP, and if I was voting today, I think I'm voting Yordan MVP. Like, the fact that he has the highest WAR – in the American League for position players. He's tied with Otani. Otani's a two-way player, so he gets points for being on the offensive end. He gets points for being a pitcher.
He gets
as
extra
well.
Points for the pitching, yes.
Yeah, which, I mean, I'm not trying to dismiss Otani's greatness. I think Otani is great. It's a shame that he plays for the Angels. Like, sign me up for a dude that has his offensive game and then it can also be like a number two in your starting rotation. I think Otani's phenomenal. I love Shohei Otani. Mm-hmm. But if I'm voting for MVP right now, this is the second best record in the American League. The Angels are out of the race already, and Jordan's doing it mostly with his offense. And showed off the arm yesterday. Like, Jordan would have my vote to be the American League MVP if I'm the one voting, and I'm voting today.
Did you think he had that arm?
Well, I saw the one a couple weeks ago where he threw it 94. So I did going into yesterday, but when he threw it 94 like 2 weeks ago, no, I didn't think he had that arm. And I had the same thought that you did, Blankers. Whenever Maton, he induced the pop fly, which was fine. Like, Maton, you come into the spot, bases loaded, one out, you're still up by two runs. Like, it doesn't matter if you allow a run to score, right?
Right.
You know, allow one to score, get the two outs, leave the inning with the lead, even if it's a one-run lead. So whenever he hit the pop-up into, you know, pretty deep left field, I was like, okay, well, it's a one-run game. Maton did his job. And when Jordan just heaved it at 92 miles per hour to the plate, I didn't like it. I was like, here we go, Jordan showing his inexperience in left field, overshooting his cutoff man, allowing the tying run to move from second to third, the go-ahead run to move from first to second. As soon as it left his hand, I didn't like it. I'll be honest with you. And as soon as the ball got to the plate, Martin Maldonado, good call again with that tag, tags the runner out, I was like, well, I feel like an idiot. How stupid am I to doubt Jordan Alvarez's baseball IQ and his cannon to throw the dude out at the plate? That was amazing. I was shocked.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I think that everything kind of came together, but you look at it and say, this is kind of like the way the Astros' entire season has gone, because the slow start and everybody starts thinking the worst, but the fly ball to Jordan and people start, you know, already are like holding their breath, like, oh God, can he just get there and catch the ball? But then when he loads up, gets his body behind it and shows that he's going to actually make a play to the plate, now everybody's even more like, what the hell are they doing? Kind of like when they started digging out from the slow start and everybody was watching them. But then to have the cohesion between his throw, Maldi's catch and tag, and the way that it all came together, and then he comes up and leads off the next inning with a home run, and you're like, in a nutshell, that's what the Astros season has been like, because all of a sudden they're hitting the home runs again. They're putting crooked numbers on the board. They're doing the improbable and coming back from 5-0 the other day as well. And their pitching staff has been unbelievable. And everything has kind of fallen in place again to where we look back now and go, well, what were we worried about for all this time? I mean, look, they're the same old Astros. I think a lot of people had a lot of concerns that this was the first year they weren't going to be the same old Astros. But thank goodness, as we look at them as constructed right now, they look like the same old Astros, which is great.
They look good. They look like they have potentially the MVP in the American League. Is Jordan Alvarez your MVP? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776.
I know I want him in left field every damn day.
I wouldn't go that far. His bat's still too good. I know he's got a cannon, but I still only want his bat. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's a Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Is Jordan your MVP? I want to take a look at the pitching aspect of yesterday's game as well. Killer Bees, ESPN975, ESPN925.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What's going on here?
What are you talking about? Jeremy, are you there?
Yeah. Are we on?
Yeah. Welcome back.
Killer Bees, ESPN.
Grab a chair. Let's go.
ESPN 92.5. This Friday, our summer circuit takes us to Cypress Trail Hideout, home of Papa Charlie's Barbecue. We'll be broadcasting live noon to 7. Come enjoy amazing barbecue, cold beer, frozen cocktails, and a whole lot more. You can register to win a new grill from Texas Star Grill Shop and a weekend getaway from Lafayette Travel. This Friday, we'll see you at Cypress Trail Hideout, home of Papa Charlie's Barbecue on Hempstead near Spring Cypress. Cannot wait to get some of that barbecue. All right, Jordan Alvarez, is he your MVP? Hits home run number 25 yesterday. He's on pace for a little more than 50. Would break Bagwell's record of 47. Halfway point tonight, by the way, Blankers. 81st game of the year. Christian Javier pitching tonight against Brad Kelner. Brad Kelner's on the mound for Kansas City. Brother Bear tweeted us. He said, not saying that Yordan is Vlad Guerrero yet, but he's hitting balls that are out of the strike zone like Vlad Guerrero. Yesterday was kind of the exception to that, though, because if you look at his chase rate, it's incredible. Like, he has such good plate discipline, too. That's why he's the complete hitter. He can hit for average, he can hit for power, and he's not going to chase out of the zone. And, oh, yeah, for a slugger, he's actually really good at, like, making contact. He doesn't strike out a lot for a big power hitter.
Well, that's what I keep saying is the one thing that kind of separates him from everybody, except for Judge to an extent, but I don't think even Judge is the same kind of hit for average hitter. You look at Stanton's numbers and Rizzo's numbers and a lot of the other guys' numbers, and they're hitting in the 220s to 240s to, they're lucky to hit 250. But when you talk about what he does from plate discipline and coverage to the ability because he barrels so many things up. And the other thing that I think that people don't focus enough on is the fact that, and this might help him with our conversation last segment if he starts going the other way, because of the fact that he has the shift, every single team he plays, and they add an extra fielder in shallow right field, it's even more difficult for him to get singles and get, on base through just a regular hit. But yet he finds a way because he hits the ball so damn hard that he hits the alleys, he hits them by people, and he hits for average, which I think separates him from everybody else in the discussion for MVP.
Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN. Chris in Humble wants to talk about Yordan. Chris, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up?
Hey, gentlemen. Hey, so first of all, yes, he is the MVP so far to the season. I also think he is one of the greatest, or actually he is the greatest trade in Houston Astros history. He's one of the greatest re-signings pound for pound for the amount of money and years that he got and the and everything he's done after the signing. He's actually gotten way better since signing. And a sidebar is there's a lot of people saying how they want Yordan in the home run derby. I actually don't want him in the home run derby. I actually want him to rest. Let him be in the All-Star game, when he gets voted in. But let him rest and don't let him get injured in any way possible because of a home run derby. I've seen a lot of guys who hit for power, and after the home run derby, they go down big time. That's it, guys.
Appreciate the call, Chris. As far as the home run derby, let's start there, Blinkers. We talked about this a little bit yesterday as well, but I personally don't care. Like, I believe it's a myth with the whole it ruins your swing or it wears you out. Like, these dudes are taking tons of cuts every single day. Mm-hmm. Is it the home run derby? No. But they're in the cages. They're taking the live BP before the game. They're swinging a lot. So I don't put a whole lot of weight in the fatigue factor or the ruining the swing factor at all. But I also don't really care too much about, like, I think that the biggest reason of Yordan being in the home run derby is for his marketability, right? It can make him some endorsements. It can make him some commercial deals, all of that stuff. It can make him a star. But I don't think it does a whole lot for the Houston Astros, right? Like, Yordan being a star, that's fine and dandy. That's great. It's not a bad thing because you do have him locked up for the next six seasons after this one. It just, I don't know if it really helps the team, but I think it's a net zero. Like, I couldn't care less. If he does it, great. I'll be cheering for him, and I'll have more incentive to watch the home run derby. But if he doesn't, okay, that's great, too. You don't have to worry about him straining a hip.
I mean, you look at the derby that was here, and Berkman was in it, and it didn't hurt Berkman at all. And Berkman's not a power hitter, and so he was. If there was anybody that was swinging out of his shoes and doing something he doesn't normally do that could really take him out of the kind of groove that he would be in as a hit for average type guy, it would have been Berkman. So the fact that if he wants to do it, so be it. I think it would be fun, but just a fantastic storyline because it's back in L.A. and everybody would have a chance to tell the story nationally that we know locally that the Dodgers made this Josh Fields trade thinking that they had to enhance their bullpen and they really weren't giving anything up in return. And now, lo and behold, that afterthought that they gave up is a guy that could win MVP, that could win the home run derby, that comes back to L.A. that says, hey, I didn't forget and look at me now. That would be fantastic. But if he doesn't want to do it, then I'm fine with that too because the last thing I want to do is have anything that takes him out of the groove that he's in or makes him feel uncomfortable. He seems like a guy not that he shies from the spotlight, but he's not that guy that's constantly craving the attention and the interviews and with the bat flips and all the other things that a lot of the guys are doing these days. So if he wants to kind of incognito it and stay kind of, out of the beaten path of everything going on during All-Star, fine. I'm fine with that too.
I push back a little bit on the Bergman being a power hitter, though. He had some pretty good pop in his heyday.
He did, but I mean, he was he'd tell you himself, he wasn't looking to, like, be a home run hitter. He just squared up enough baseballs that he hit home runs.
He was a good hitter. He was a really good hitter. He wasn't like Giancarlo Stanton, right, where he's selling out to hit 40 home runs a year. Bergman, I think Bergman's one of the more underrated hitters in our generation. I think he's the second best switch hitter, maybe even the best switch hitter, I think, like in the last 20 years. 713-780-3776. As far as the signing, like you got Yordan very cheap, and I think it goes to your point where he's not, you know, craving the limelight. He's not craving the fame and the fortune. Sure, he got paid handsomely, $115 million for 6 years, but we're talking about a guy who could potentially win the MVP, who's in his mid-20s, and you got him for $17 million per. Like, if he would have hit free agency this offseason, somebody could pay him $40 million. So the Astros have got him at like a 50% discount, quite frankly.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And, man, I don't know. You know what the thing is? As I look at the whole big picture of all of this, I'd be okay if they all were going to take another All-Star game off, because they really had to bust their ass to, you know, in so many ways, because of the fact you've missed Altuve for a stretch of time. You've missed Peña twice for two different injuries. Brantley now is the guy that's been missing. So not only did they have to dig out of the early hole where they ended up 6-6 and now look where they are, 20 some games over 500, but because they were doing a lot of the damage that they had to do with a makeshift lineup with a lot of their bench players playing, I'd be fine if they all wanted to sit. But the storyline's too juicy. You got Dusty going back to the Dodgers, going back to L.A. as the manager. You've got so many guys that would like to, you know, basically remind all of Los Angeles and the whole baseball world, we're still here and we're still doing it. And if Altuve is going to be the starter at second, that's fantastic. Yordan, as we already covered with the story with the Dodgers, that's phenomenal. But if they all want to sit too, I'm fine with that, because this team right now has had to endure so much. And I'm not saying they're fragile by any means, but I don't need them to endure too much more, because coming out of the break now, it's a shorter break because you got that makeup with the Yankees too. Two straight games out of the gates. And if you get those two, now the best record in the American League is well within your grasp. I'm fine with it either way, and I understand all the drama that goes with it. Right. But I'm also totally cool with it if they just all want to sit it out.
I also agree with Chris that it's the best trade in Astros history, because there's been two that are way ahead of
everybody
else. Is the
Bagwell, Larry Anderson, like, in the conversation?
To me, those are the two that are far ahead of any. Like, to me, there's two that belong in the conversation. What's the greatest trade in Houston Astros history? Larry Anderson for Jeff Bagwell, or is it Josh Fields for Yordan Alvarez? To me, like, maybe Yordan needs a little bit more volume, right? But I think if you're trying to predict it and call your shot, I agree. And Larry Anderson was a pretty good ball player. He's a little older whenever the Astros traded him, but he was far better of a major leaguer than Fields was.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And Larry Anderson was a guy different than Fields. He was a guy that was looked at as the missing piece.
Yep.
He was a guy that was going to be the missing piece in the bullpen that could close a deal. That's why it was so urgent. Josh Fields was just a piece. He was an added arm that was a veteran that could fit in with a team that was trying to do something, but he wasn't going to be the end-all, be-all. And I don't think anybody in their right mind of minds thought that, and if you've seen the special they did on AT&T when Baggy got inducted into the Hall of Fame, from where they got him from, I don't think anybody could have expected, though he had a lot of promise and his managers in the minors saw that kind of really good swing, no one knew that he was going to turn out to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. I mean, same thing with Yordan, too, right? Like, the Dodgers.
Yordan's got to do it over a long stretch of time, too. That's why I think you got to have that Bagwell trade in the conversation.
Yeah. I think he does need a little bit more volume, but I do agree with Chris that it will go down as the best trade in Astros history. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right. Robert Flores, you can catch him on MLB Network, MLB Central. Of course, he is a Houston Cougar. He's going to join us next to talk about this Houston Astro baseball team. We'll see if he thinks Yordan Alvarez should be the MVP if you're voting at the halfway point. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Look, we were just talking about it on Twitch. Brad Gilbert, who does tennis, used to have a full head of hair. Not so much anymore. He could probably use Doc Linville. There's a lot of guys out there that could use Doc Linville that aren't aware of the NeoGraft procedure. That's what we're here to do. Let you guys know that there's something out there for you so you don't have to shave your head. I saw Doc Linville about a year ago. Doc Linville made a difference. He came to me and he said, Joel, you want your old hairline back? I was like, come on, Doc, what are you talking about? I don't need sprays and creams and foams and all the stuff that masks the issue. Plus, I'm married with kids. I don't know that I'm that as concerned as I once was. He goes, well, I can do it for you, and it's simple. And he explained the NeoGraft procedure. It's all natural. It's all your own hair. It's taking hair where you have a ton of it, like the sides and the back, moving it where you don't have as much, like your hairline or that baboon's butt that sticks out on the top of your head. And in about 6 to 9 months, once the follicles are firmly planted and in place, you're going to see an unbelievable difference in the amount of coverage that you get from your hair. It's a phenomenal procedure. It's fantastic. I didn't have any pain. There was minimal swelling. It's about a half-day procedure. You're back on your feet and doing everything just like you would naturally right after the procedure's over, and especially the next day. And then you start reaping all the benefits. And because you're an ESPN listener, you get a consultation that normally costs you $150 for absolutely free. You can ask all the questions. Like the 95-plus percent success rate of every follicle that's moved. That was the one that got me. If you're going to move all these follicles, but only half of them are going to take, then what's the sense in doing it? When he said over 95% of them are going to take, and they're going to grow, and they're going to get thicker and stronger, and you're going to see a difference, I was like, I'm in. That's great. You can check it all out, too. Ask all the questions from financing to the recovery to the procedure itself, and they'll walk you through everything and see if it's right for you. Go to 975hair.com. And go see my friend Doc Linville. Have the consultation and see if it's right for you. The NeoGraft procedure is a life changer.
ESPN 97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now, from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRNP guest line. Joining us now, Robert Flores. You can watch Robert co-host MLB Network's MLB Central every weekday, 8 a.m. Central. And, of course, a fellow Houston Cougar. Roflo, thanks for taking a few minutes to hang out with us. We were just having the conversation. Is Jordan Alvarez the MVP at the halfway point of the Major League Baseball season? What do you think?
I think that he's certainly in the mix. I think I would lean just a little bit towards Aaron Judge, just a hair. I was going to say, you know, Aaron Judge obviously plays a premium defensive position in center field, but if Jordan Alvarez is going to continue to throw dudes out from deep left field, then he'll close the gap in that area as well on Aaron Judge. But yeah, I think right now those are the two guys that are the leaders in the clubhouse as we approach the All-Star break.
Robert, big fan of your work. Appreciate you joining us. Question for you when it comes to just the Astros in general. We saw we were calling it the Gotham Gauntlet of the games against the Mets and the Yankees, and the Astros go 7-2, but actually could have gone 9-0. But it was kind of annoying to me that in the two games the Yankees won with the Judge hits, they became the first block on SportsCenter. But when the Astros were doing what they were doing and the damage that they did, it kind of got buried, you know, a couple segments in. And I'm wondering if there's still kind of a stigmatism that they're fighting across baseball in terms of people that are just, I don't know if they're hoping that they're not good or they're just not giving them the credit.
I'm glad you asked this question because it's one that comes up a lot. So, and I think I really have the most unique perspective on this, because I did grow up in Houston, and I'm now a member of the national media, which everyone hates, by the way. We get it. Everyone hates the media. Everyone hates your team. We all root against your team and stuff like that. So, with that being said, the anti-Astro East Coast bias thing, for the most part, yeah, there's some pockets here and there, I'm sure, but for the most part, it doesn't exist. I'm here to tell you it does not exist. Most people, members of the media, writers, broadcasters, again, you're going to have a couple of holdouts, but for the most part, they are so beyond 2017, and it's just not something that no one's holding a grudge against the Astros. Again, I'm speaking in general terms. No one is rooting for them to fail. When the Astros threw that combined no-hitter at Yankee Stadium, we led with it. MLB Network led with it. So, and I get it. I understand, there's a kind of a, You know, people just hate the media and people think that they're always rooting against their team. For the most part, it isn't true. And that's just not the Astros. That's for every team, right? And like I said, I get it. People think that media members are rooting against their team all the time. For the most part, it's made up. It doesn't exist. It's tinfoil hat kind of stuff. So, like I said, I grew up in Houston. I think I have a unique perspective on this whole issue and notion of rooting against the Astros. For the most part, I'm here to tell you, it doesn't exist.
Robert, I think where Houston would see it more is not so much of like pro-Yankee versus anti-Astro. I think it's more about like the exposure, right? Like
right.
Being in the Northeast, like, you know, they're talking a little bit more about the Yankees, Mets than the Astros. And, you know, it takes a no-hitter to be the lead. Whereas, you know, the Astros second-best team in the American League, Yankees the first-best team in the American League. If you're not pitching a no-hitter, you're kind of buried down the rundown where the Yankees wouldn't be.
Well, I mean, I will counter that by saying, you know, the Yankees, I believe they're still on a pace to set the record for most wins in the regular season, or at least tie the record with the 2001 Seattle Mariners. The New York Mets were as of a couple of weeks ago or week and a half ago, they had the best record in the National League. So, like, I don't know what you, like, what is the solution? Are they just not supposed to talk about the Yankees and the Mets when they're winning? I get your point, but again, like, it's not like people are talking about the Yankees and the Mets and that both of those teams suck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be a much different conversation. Is, man, why is MLB Network leading with the Yankees all the time when they're 15 games under 500?
Sure,
that's definitely you know, a cause for a gripe. But when your teams happen to both be in New York, both happen to be leading in their division, both happen to be leading the top of their league, I'm not quite sure what you expect content creators and media people to do. You know, look, the Astros are on the short list. If you were to poll every national media member of who's their favorite to win the World Series, the Yankees will come up, the Mets will come up, the Dodgers will come up, and the Astros will come up. So, like I said, I think for the most part, this anti-Astro bias thing, for the most part, I'm telling you, it just doesn't exist. And I know there's people driving around in their car looking at their radio right now saying, hey, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. I'm sorry, man. I do know what I'm talking about because, again, I was that person. When I grew up in Houston, I was like, how come they never talk about the Astros?
You Robert,
know, I was that guy. I was that guy. But I'm here to tell you, for the most part, it doesn't exist.
I welcome you to stop back into our Twitch. They love you as it is. But you've seen it. So, I mean,
yeah.
If you wanna...
Shout out to your people on Twitch, guys. You guys are killing it. Keep it creepy as you always do. I love Twitch.
I got to ask you about the team overall, because we know you're a fan and we love that. And we analyze this team, obviously, on a daily basis. And the good thing overall is, after having concerns about Alex Bregman, it looks like he's figuring it out. Yuli Gurriel, who we were wondering if it was just the end of the road, is starting to figure it out. Center field, now that Jake Myers is back, looks like they've got someone that they can rely on there too, where it might have been a deficiency earlier. What does this team need that it doesn't currently have between now and the trade deadline so that it can not only stay where it's at, but maybe have a leg up and compete for a World Series again?
I think they need one more arm in the bullpen, preferably a left-handed one. I'm still a little, you know, I need more time with Jake Myers. I mean, the center field position as a whole for me, that's still one that that I look at as one that still is a work in progress. Yuli Gurriel has definitely been hitting the ball better. Alex Bregman has certainly been hitting the ball much better yesterday with another homer and a double, so that's all welcome signs. The catching position, I think, is going to be the most intriguing about what they want to do with that. Because obviously Martin Maldonado and Jason Castro, and you want to throw Corey Lee in there, you know, as well, they're not giving you offensively say what other teams are doing, you know, like JT Realmuto or Wilson Contreras, who his name has been mentioned as a possible connection with the Astros. But particularly Martin Maldonado, he gives you so much more where his offense can just be considered gravy. But is that, how much longer is that sustainable? He had a couple multi-homer game a couple days ago, so that's definitely a welcome sign. But he gives you so much behind the plate and how he handles that staff. He has held in such high regard in that clubhouse. Well, how do they proceed if they want to upgrade that position, or do they go in other areas?
I think my point of contention every time that Maldonado gets brought up, Roflo, is what the Astros value from that position, right? Like, if they value
Correct.
Defense and they value the fact that, you know, the staff ERA is as high as it is and they give a lot of that weight to Martin Maldonado, there's no way they're looking to upgrade.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. That's the kind of the riddle. It's like, if, okay, well, let's say we bring in a Wilson Contreras and he's going to give you more in the offensive end, in the offensive area, but will that mean a suffering in the ERA and the pitching? So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how they proceed with that. I personally don't think they will get Wilson Contreras. I don't think they have the prospect capital to get it done. So with that being said, maybe they shore up some of the other areas where they talked that we mentioned. I really think that they need a lefty out of the bullpen. They haven't had one. I mean, hell, even going back to 2019, and it's been so long since they had a really, really shut down lefty in the bullpen. I always say that their best left-handed reliever is closing games for the Milwaukee Brewers, Josh Hader.
Yeah.
So, you had to bring up the Carlos Gomez trade, huh?
We were talking about trades that worked well for the franchise. That one didn't go so well.
That one did not work out so well. So for me, if you're ranking them, I would say try to find a bullpen piece, figure out what the center field position is going to look like and who's going to man that, and then what do you do, if anything, behind the plate.
Yeah, Dusty Baker would agree with you about that lefty. He brings it up every chance he can get. Robert Flores, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate you coming on, and enjoy your work on MLB Network.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks, guys, for having me, and have a great weekend.
That's Robert Flores, Cougar, and also co-host MLB Network's MLB Central weekdays at 8 a.m. There's a trade in the NFL, and also I want to talk about what Flores mentioned about the pieces to add, the order that he talked about them. And look, we got to talk about that East Coast bias. We'll do it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Years of research and innovation. Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Quarterback trade in the NFL. Tell you the details now, then we'll react to it at 1 o'clock. But the Panthers acquiring Baker Mayfield from the Browns for a 2024 conditional fifth-round draft pick. So not a whole lot for Baker Mayfield. Could influence the Houston Texans. We'll respond to that at 1 o'clock. But you called this one, Blankers. You said that was going to be the home for Baker.
I did. And even as early as I was telling Brendan, today on Vanessa and Gallant, they were trying to find a home for where Baker could possibly go, and they were stuck on Seattle. And I texted both of them, and Vanessa was like, oh, Joel says Carolina. And Paul's like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. I mean, I was like, okay, well, you know, there it is. So all of a sudden, lo and behold, today's the day. We knew Matt Rhule wanted to win, so, I mean, he's going to go get his guy any way he can try it.
I don't know if he can win,
but he's got to take every last shot. It's like Matt Nagy. You got to keep swinging until they tell you to clean up your stuff and get the hell out of the office.
All right, I want to react to what the question that you asked, Roflo, which is a good one, because, I mean, Robert lived here, grew up here, went to U of H, the finest institution in the entire country.
All right.
And now works at MLB Network, of course, was at ESPN prior to that. So he's very much lived that mainstream media when it comes to sports and in the Northeast. You know, he talked about it from the sense of, like, they're not holding any grudges against Houston, which I agree with. I don't think that people really hold grudges against the Astros. I think that they might throw some shots. I think they throw some strays to the Astros whenever they get brought up. up about the sign-stealing scandal. But I look at it more like I don't watch ESPN. I really don't. The only time I watch ESPN is whenever there's games on. So, like, I don't see the rundown. I don't see where they're leading with and who's in the first block, who's in the second block. I have Hulu, so I don't get MLB Network. So the way that I view it, though, is kind of like if we're just taking a peek behind our curtain. Whenever we're putting together our rundown and talking points, like, we're going to lead with Astros. We're going to lead with Texans. We're not going to talk a whole lot about tennis, right? Like, I view that the same way as MLB Network and ESPN, where if their priority is the Northeast, because that's the biggest market. Like, there's the New York's a bigger market. Boston's a bigger market. There's more intention there. So you're going to pander to the popular opinion, so to say. You're pandering to your viewers and the most amount of viewers. I feel like that's why the Astros kind of, you know, middle of the pack when it comes to national coverage.
See, but I'll counter that first and foremost by saying that there's a sports center in Los Angeles, and that the West Coast, they do the same thing. They will bury the Astros. And of the nine games against the New York teams, the only two times that the Astros found their way, three times that they found their way into the first block, were the two Judge walk-offs, and then the no-hitter found its way into the tail end of the first block. It wasn't even the lead story, and that's a big deal in my mind. And I hear what you're saying, but I also think that when you look at it, I'm not going to sit there and argue with him because he's a good guy, he's a good guest, he's knowledgeable. But I'll push back and say, Jeff Passan, in so many words, has said on multiple occasions, he still, not that he has an axe to grind, but he still has issues with you know, the Astros, or were they punished enough, or did the players didn't get punishment. Bob Nightingale, who's also been great on the air, but Bob Nightingale was also a guy that was very poignant and very kind of curt about anything Astros related because of the fact that it was still in his mind what happened. We're so far removed from 17, that's right, but yet that's the one part of this whole equation that I don't think is been erased from people's minds. I think that they still hold in the back of their minds, no matter whenever they hear Astros and how many, the naivety of all these different fan bases that think, oh, Yordan Alvarez, we hate him because he cheated. No, he didn't. He wasn't anywhere close to it. But they don't have that clue either. They just hear Astros and still revert back to that and think about that too. So I think that there is still somewhat of a bias. There still is a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of national guys. I think they know it's their job, so they have to try and kind of dispel it and put it under wraps. But I think it still rears its head from time to time.
But I do think that you're speaking to your demographic, right? Like, whenever you were broadcasting to Rockets fans, you were broadcasting to Rocket fans. When I'm broadcasting to Cougars, I'm broadcasting to Cougars. When we're doing this show, we have a Houston view, right? And I think that nationally, like, sometimes we view national as like they should be fair across the board, when quite honestly, it's not that way. You're going to have a bigger chunk of people in New York watching. You're going to have a bigger chunk of people in Boston or L.A. watching, whereas Houston, Milwaukee, not so much. So that's going to be a little bit further down the line. And I think that Roflo kind of took it more to the, like, bias against the Astros, which you can still see it from certain people. And he said, like, the majority don't. Like, I don't think MLB Network holds a bias against the Astros. I don't think any intelligent baseball journalist or media member holds a bias against the Astros for 2017. I think the ones that you see still hold a bias are the ones with an agenda. And I feel like that's the one that Robert Flores weren't talking about, because he said the majority, you know? So it kind of backed up there a little bit.
And I think the other thing too, Jeremy, and Brendan and I were talking about this during the break, it goes all the way back to, like, Hall of Fame voting and the steroid era and everything like that. You can say this is a different era of baseball, but you still have the same crotchety writers that have been there forever that have a vote and have a say-so, and they have, you know, a scribe. They have an ability to reach a large number of baseball fans, and their opinion matters. And when they write, you can tell the slant that a lot of their columns have to it, or when they're on the air, you can still feel it to a certain extent. So as much as they say, oh, the steroid era is over, but when the voting comes up, it's not forgotten. It's the same way that I kind of make that comparison to what's going on with the Astros. It's a new day in baseball. It's a new year, and it's a different team. But when it comes up in terms of evaluating them as one of the better teams and having it, I still think it in the back of their minds, it plays a role in the opinions that they take.
Yeah, I don't think that they've forgotten. And like I said, you see the shots. You see a few of the subtle references quite a bit. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Eric wants to weigh in on this. Eric, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up?
Hey, guys, the only time the Yankees don't get mentioned at the top of the ESPN is when that that report came out. That's the only time. And also, the Astros did lead the other night when Alvarez did hit off the leadoff home run or the game-winning home run. John Buchegross said he acted like he knew it was coming. Well, John, why don't you send some more topless shirts to that ESPN anchor? That's all I have to say.
Oh, Eric taking shots at Buchegross. I love it.
Bucci Maine. But as much as Eric kind of used a different roundabout way to get there, but I think that's part of the point that we're making too, is that whether they're putting a tongue-in-cheek kind of whammy in the middle of their Sports Center report, they're supposed to just be delivering the highlights and the news as from a sports perspective. When they stick something like that in there, they may think they're being cute, but the fact is that it just shows you they haven't forgotten.
Yeah, see, that's like what Roflo said. He said whenever they had the no-hitter that they led with that. Which Major League Baseball team that has a no-hitter are you not leading
right
with? To me, it's not the sensational moments, like the walk-off home run by an MVP candidate. Yeah, you're going to lead with that. Yeah, you're going to mention that in your first block. But this is the second-best team in the AL. They've been mm-hmm. to five straight ALCSs. They've been to three World Series since 2017. They're one of the best teams in all of baseball, and they probably are the best team over that five-year period if you add it all together. So, like, whenever they're doing just, you know, a 9-7 win over Kansas City, where if the Yankees did that, it's a lead story. The Astros yes. do that, it's in the middle
and,
of the rundown.
And Jeremy, call me crazy, but if the Guardians won 7-9 against the Mets and the Yankees, I think that it would be a bigger deal. I think that they would be more comfortable saying, look at this team in Cleveland that no one gave a chance to, and look what they just did to the two best teams in each league, and it would be a big deal. But because it was the Astros, I just felt like it was downplayed. And a lot of times the people that I talk to that know the producers and the people putting these blocks together and these storylines, they're admittedly Yankees fans. And, yep. and they are, and because of that, when they stack their shows, they use, whether they want to admit it or not, and they can't professionally, but they will play that into, if I've got two stories to choose from, and one of them involves the Astros, they're probably going with the other story.
Sure, sure. I think the demographics do come into play there, though. Like, if you have 70% of New Yorkers watching it and 30% of Houston just for lack of really bad numbers, you're going to facilitate the 70% ahead of the 30%.
I mean, that's fair. But I think, like I said, now that they've got SportsCenter in D.C. with Scott Van Pelt, and they've got SportsCenter L.A. for the West Coast, I just think that plays a factor in saying, well, then the Dodgers should lead in L.A., and the Nats should lead in D.C., which the Nats yep. aren't very relevant. But I think that overall, I get when they play to the demographic, but at a certain point, you're supposed to be the middle-of-the-road delivery of all sports news, and you weigh it based on the biggest stories. And if it's the biggest story, if a guy hits a walk-off, then based on whatever else happened in sports, that should be in your top block.
I mean, I'll be completely honest. I think that the media opinion definitely panders to one side, whether we're talking about sports or we're talking about things that are bigger than sports. Flores mentioned his pieces to add. He said reliever, center fielder, catcher. No surprise didn't say first baseman to that.
Yeah.
But do you agree with his order?
You know me. All along, I've said all year long that they have to add one, and I'd prefer two arms to the bullpen. I don't know that it has to be a left-handed reliever because they have righties that get lefties out pretty consistently. But I do think that I agree with the order, starting with a relief pitcher. But then from there, you've got me more and more convinced that a Trey Mancini type is the kind of guy that has flexibility where you put him. But just adding a bat and then figuring out where everybody plays, that would be my preference at number two.
Yeah, I agree with the order, too. Like, I think you and I are on different stances of, like, the importance of adding anything. But if you're having to rank them, I agree. I think it's relief pitching, huge drop-off, center field catcher. A little surprise he left off first base.
Well, but I think the other thing, too, Jeremy, excuse me, is the fact that because he's not here on a daily basis,
yep.
he's a little less bullish on Jake Meyers. When we know what we know. Huh?
For Maldonado.
Right, but exactly. But as it relates to Meyers, when we've heard the general manager's long-term plan and how Jake Meyers fits that, that's kind of why we have the take that we have, because we know that's a guy that's already been penciled in as a long-term solution in center field unless he completely craps the bed.
All right, Baker Mayfield has been traded from Cleveland to Carolina. What it means for the Browns, what it means for the Panthers, and what it means for the Houston Texans. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's good.